relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Things didn't change overnight. How is it that big corporations such as Coca-Cola genuflect at the altar of wokeness? Why is it that one of those popular characters in one of the most popular TV shows sends out an Instagram post and has to be summarily deplatformed? Of course, I'm talking about Gina Carano. Where did all of this begin? We must understand the origins of critical race theory and political correctness out of control. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, the man who has done the most. If you're watching a segment, a groundbreaking segment on Fox News or elsewhere, is, of course, Chris Rufo. Chris Rufo is a writer, filmmaker, director of the Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty. Also, he has made a film that, before I knew Chris, this is the film that changed it for me, America Lost. You've got to check it out. We'll give you a link later. Former research fellow at the Heritage Foundation at the Claremont Institute as well. Chris, welcome back to America First.
It's great to be with you.
So let's begin at the beginning. You have to get your terms down before you analyze any issue. The word that has been bandied around for years now is woke. You've got to be woke, wokeness. What is being woke, Chris Rufo, and where does it come from?
Yeah, the phrase woke really emerges in the 1960s and 1970s. And the idea is that the masses, whether they're kind of the proletarian class-based masses or minorities and kind of race-based masses, have fallen asleep to their own oppression. And it was used in the United States, this idea that the United States preaches the values of freedom and equality and liberty. But in reality, it is a racist, sexist, capitalist oppressor state. And the job of the left-wing revolutionaries of the time was to awaken the masses to their own oppression and then turn them against the United States, the U.S. government. And only by becoming woke, by becoming awakened, by reaching critical consciousness, could you really understand what's happening in the United States and then fight for a kind of left-wing, a communist utopia.
Is it fair to say that this shift to this concept of being woke was an attempt to fix communism in terms of its failure to find roots in developed Western nations with robust middle classes? Because, you know, I've studied this. My parents escaped communism. Originally, it was about material exploitation, the capitalists exploiting the working class. It was about lack of class consciousness amongst the blue-collar class. And that didn't seem to work in developed Western nations. So was it a jettisoning of that classic Marxist concept of class differentiation and focusing on the material? How much of this was an attempt to fix the communist theory?
Yeah, a large part of it, almost all of it, especially in the United States. The United States, in comparison to some European countries, never had a hereditary aristocracy. It never had true class divisions. But more than that, capitalism was a huge success story in the United States. You had a massive middle class. You have widespread prosperity. So those ideas of overthrowing the capitalist oppressor never really took hold in the United States because people, they had a car and a home and a chicken in every pot, as the saying goes, never really bought into the communist idea. So in the 1960s, American kind of left-wing radicals said, you know, the idea of fomenting class-based revolution in the United States has totally failed. We need to pivot. And they looked for weak points in American society. They looked for places where they could heighten the contradiction, where they could deepen divisions. And they realized that the race issues were the kind of entry point of communist theory. So they abandoned class-based Marxism and brought in a kind of race-based Marxist dialectic that explains, frankly, much of what you've seen today, especially over the past year.
We're talking to Chris Rufo. Follow him at Real Chris Rufo. That's R-U-F-O on Twitter. And he is the director of the Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty. Now, originally, back in the 60s and 70s, the SDS, the Weather Underground, the Maoists who were attempting to do revolution, quote-unquote, in Western nations, a lot of their targeting had to do with sexuality as well. One of the key phrases of the Weather Underground was smash monogamy, that in sex there is also this repression. Is there any connection to today's woke movement in terms of sexuality? Is there any overlap in the transgender movement between those who are talking about oppressed racial minorities and the transgender agenda?
Yeah, I think the idea, it all comes from, you know, the philosopher Herbert Marcuse, who, following this line of thought in what's called the Frankfurt School, was basically all of these social institutions and customs, whether it's the nuclear family, whether it's a kind of two genders, so kind of sexual identities, whether it's kind of capitalist structures or any kind of tradition. This was all seen as a form of oppression or repression. And the idea was that to achieve total liberation, you not only had to break up the official structures of government and capitalist kind of economies, but you actually had to break up all vestiges of tradition. So you had to wreck the nuclear family, wreck traditional conceptions of gender, wreck traditional religion. And the idea was that if you break away or smash all of those traditional concepts, you would emerge as a kind of new human being, as a liberated soul. Unfortunately, we saw just the opposite, especially in America, in poor communities. We did smash the traditional family. It ended in poverty and disaster and violence and chaos. And I think what we're seeing now is they're going systematically through each of our dominant social institutions, trying not only to tinker with them, but really to blow them up from the ground up.
Is it any coincidence that one of the key tenets of the Black Lives Matter movement, according to their own webpage, is the dismantling, the quote-unquote targeting of the traditional nuclear family with one mother, one father? Is that a coincidence, Chris?
Yeah, it's not a coincidence, but it is a real irony because, you know, as I showed in my film and in other work, in papers, it's, you know, the family issues are tremendously important. And a wide range of scholars from left to right pretty much has reached a consensus that the two-parent nuclear household, both at the individual and community level, is the number one predictor of poverty in America. So If you live in a single parent household, or you live in a neighborhood with a lot of single parent households at the community level, you're much more likely to be poor by an order of magnitude than people who have the traditional family. And this has really caused devastation for so many people. I find it just absolutely outrageous and a kind of a really horrific thing that schools and media and institutions would be perpetuating this narrative of smashing the traditional family when elites of all backgrounds know that these things are important, right? If you're an educated, affluent American, you're likely to live in a traditional, stable two-parent households. Meanwhile, those same people who benefit from the traditional family are seeking to use the means of communication to destroy it in poor communities. It's an absolute outrage. But sadly, as you point out, it's not a coincidence at all. It's a deliberate technique and strategy.
You mentioned Marcuse. A lot of these key theorists of the new left or the neo-Marxists are not, how shall I say this? They're not enjoyable to read. For those who really want to understand this a little bit better, where should they start? Who is the quintessential? Is it Gramsci? Is it Adorno? Is it Alinsky? What is the easiest to begin with?
Yeah, Alinsky's interesting. Alinsky's interesting because he was really writing at a kind of popular level. So you can read the Rules for Radicals. You'll get an idea of some of the strategies and tactics. Another short essay you could read is Marcuse's Repressive Tolerance. It's very short. It's very readable. And the idea was that, and we see this tremendously today, and if you're talking about Gina Carano or any of these incidents, where the left has baked into their political program a double standard. And they basically say, cancel culture is for thee, not for me. You know, you can repress speech. You can repress the freedoms of your political enemies to the right. But you can't, you're not supposed to repress or curtail the speech or freedoms of your allies to the left. And conservatives, I think we need to get a bit smarter and a bit tougher, because you hear conservatives all the time complaining about the double standard, pointing out the hypocrisies. But, you know, wake up, folks. The hypocrisy is the point. The double standard is the point. It's not that they are being hypocritical. They actually endorse hypocrisy. In Marcuse's Repressive Tolerance, the hypocrisy is the key strategy. And they say if you can kind of enforce these laws unequally, enforce these social and cultural rules unequally, you should do so. And conservatives need to understand that the only way to push back against the double standard is not to complain about it, but to actually have the power where you reach a kind of cultural arms parity, where you can say, if you come after me with a cancel, I'm going to come after you just as hard.
Yeah,
and it's, we have to look out for our allies and leverage the most we can against our enemies.
Pointing out the hypocrisy doesn't help, because they know they're being hypocritical. Stay with us, Chris Rufo here on America First with me, Sebastian Gorka. Don't touch that dial.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Well, let's make this discussion as relevant as possible. Now, 24 companies are targeting our friend Mike Lindell for cancellation. Yes, they are boycotting him and his products. Please support him. He stands up for American values. And because you're listening to this show, if you buy anything from him, he's going to give you more than 60% off if you use my name. Even if you've already got a MyPillow, buy another one just to send the cancel culture fascists a message. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A, or call 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. We are back with a man who understands the cancel culture and the origins of it better than most, Chris Rufo, director of the Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty, the man behind an incredible film called America Lost. Follow him right now at Real Chris Rufo. That's R-O-R-U-F-O. Chris, in the waning months and weeks of the Trump administration, one of the most, I believe, consequential executive orders was ever written. It had to do with critical race theory. Of course, that was undone as soon as Joe Biden came into office. Why is it important that that executive order was written then, and what did it target?
Yeah, the executive order was really simple. It basically said you can no longer scapegoat, stereotype, or demean people on the basis of race and sex. So in a lot of ways, it was just a simple reiteration of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. But what's happened in American culture and in the federal government in particular is that these kind of left-wing ideologues have hijacked these institutions not to provide public services, but to perpetuate a private left-wing ideology that demonizes people based on the basis of race, that says if you are white, for example, you are by nature of your inborn characteristics an upholder of white supremacy and racist white values. If you are a male, you are, again, kind of a upholder of the toxic patriarchy and you should repent. All of these training programs trafficked in racial stereotypes, they created hostile working environments, and they compelled speech, taking people who have maybe a faith belief or a personal conviction and force them to kind of repeat these left-wing platitudes. And the president said, enough of that, not now, not in my administration, hopefully not ever, and cracked the whip on the administrative state and basically said you can no longer do these programs that traffic in notions of racial stereotypes and sex-based stereotypes.
And how, unfortunately, yeah. And how bad is it? I know you have lots of sources inside the U.S. government. You used the phrase in one of your recent videos where you talked about regime change from the inside. This isn't just the odd sensitivity training in, you know, the Department of Waterworks somewhere. This is pervasive, and it even has reached our military academies, has it not?
It has. I've reported on, you know, more than a dozen federal agencies. And one example that I think is particularly egregious is the nuclear weapons lab that designs America's nuclear arsenal called Sandia National Laboratories down in New Mexico. They held a 3-day re-education camp for white males. So they took white male engineers. They put them into a hotel for 3 days, and they forced them to deconstruct their white male culture. They told them that their white male culture was analogous to the KKK, to lynchings, to slavery. They said that MAGA hats were a kind of weapon of white terror. And then they forced them to deconstruct that identity, to apologize for it, and eventually even write letters of apology to kind of fictitious, abstract women and people of color. This could only really be described as a kind of Maoist struggle session. And they're taking away time from people who are very competent, who I think are, in almost every case, very fair, very successful, engineers and otherwise. And this is one example, but it's happening at dozens of institutions. The Treasury Department is another one. The FBI was holding intersectionality workshops. It had really run amok, and you'd see the public institutions becoming very political, very partisan, and very dysfunctional. In the past few years.
Explain what intersectionality is. This is one of the new woke buzzwords.
Yeah, I'll explain by a story that I broke in the last few weeks. A school in Cupertino, California, was forcing first graders to learn about intersectionality and deconstruct their racial and sexual identities. So what intersectionality is it basically says instead of the old class-based, the capitalists are the oppressors, the proletariat, the kind of working class are the oppressed. Actually, oppression is a spectrum based on your various identities. So your race, sex, class, religion, physical capacity, gender, et cetera, are all either in the oppressor category or the oppressed category. And if you add them all up, you know, if you are a, you know, kind of transgender, black woman of color, you are kind of at the bottom of the oppression spectrum. And if you are a white male Christian, you're at the top of the oppressor spectrum. And they're
this is a scorecard for victimhood, in other words.
It is, yeah. It's a kind of range of victimhood based on the collection of your various identity categories. And it's really the kind of underlying theory in a lot of these training programs. They're forcing people to become hyper-conscious of their identity, and then to judge one another, not based on their behavior, their competency, their abilities, their character, but actually just judge them on the collection of their identity categories.
And let's ask the provocative question. Why is any of this bad? Why is it bad to make a six-year-old conscious of their skin color, Chris?
Well, I think that in that case, it's actually really sad. I think, having children, I live in a very diverse neighborhood. I watch my kids play with other kids, they all are getting along. And it seems like injecting the divisive racial concepts like intersectionality into first grade really kind of pierces through the innocence and natural goodness of children and then forces them to start looking at their friends and classmates and colleagues as oppressors and oppressed, really denying their basic human equality. And I think that these theories, in a sense, they offer a kind of obvious thing, right? We don't all look the same. We don't all come from the same backgrounds. That's obvious. You should treat people equally and with respect, no matter what background they come from. But it's used not to just say a very simple point like that, but it's used as a political weapon. It's used to push a very specific and very hard left political program.
We're talking to Chris Rufo. Follow him right now at Real Chris Rufo, R-U-F-O, director of the Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Let's do a little bit of intersectionality here. We are a victim of cancel culture. As you know, somebody had the audacity to question the results of the November election here on our show there for YouTube. Suspended us for 2 weeks. So what do? We have a plan B. Go to our free Rumble account, rumble.com/Seb Gorka. You'll get all of our videos right there. That's SEBGORKA, rumble.com/Seb Gorka. Also, our webpage where you can listen to the show 24/7 and watch it live. That's SebGorka.com, SEBGORKA. And also on Twitter and Facebook. Oh, what else is there? I think that's it for now. Oh, Parler. We're back on Parler. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, channel. This year marks 20 years since America's darkest day, September the 11th, 2001, and the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. Our nation's heroes, people who are willing to die for you and me, need your help. Join Tunnel to Towers on their mission to do good and help these heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's the letter T, the number 2, and the letter T.org. That's T2T.org. Thank you.
And you see what's happening, the studies that are beginning to be done, maybe at your university as well, about the impact of former military, former police officers on the growth of white supremacy in some of these groups. You may remember in one of my debates with the former president, I asked him to condemn the Proud Boys. He wouldn't do it. He said, stand by, stand ready, or whatever the phrase exactly was. It is a bane on our existence. It has always been, as Lincoln said, we have to appeal to our better angels. And these guys are not, and women are, in fact, demented. They are dangerous people.
The demented white supremacists in our military, in our police, are a bane on our existence. That was Joe Biden in a town hall just last week. How did we get here? This is the question we're asking our good friend and guest from the Discovery Institute Center on Wealth and Poverty, the director, producer of the movie America Lost. Watch it today, americalostfilm.com/premiere. You can watch it for free. Thank you, Chris Rufo, and follow him at Real Chris Rufo. Chris, I think having talked to James Lindsay and others, it's pretty apparent that when it comes to our schools and our colleges, it's the teacher colleges that were the petri dishes, that were the incubators of this new Marxist critical theory. And that's how it transformed or was transmitted into the schools. When you're hearing about all of this stuff happening in federal government, when you're hearing about it being driven through the military as well, this woke training, where is it coming from in federal government, Chris?
Well, I think a lot of the premise was laid in 2011 with an Obama executive order where he basically told every federal agency that they needed to have a diversity and equity and inclusion program and a plan and staff time being developed dedicated towards it. And on the surface, diversity, equity, inclusion, those are all very nice sounding ideas. But under the surface, what they actually mean is a kind of hard left political program. And these departments of diversity within the government, even within the military, profess to kind of celebrate diversity, celebrate people from different backgrounds. But when you actually look at the details, you actually read the materials they're putting out, they're trying to use the federal government as a kind of indoctrination point. In many cases, bombarding employees with left-wing content, asking them to commit allegiance to Black Lives Matter, rooting out conservatives and other viewpoints, and to the point where one Treasury Department official said to me anonymously, off the on the record, but guaranteed his anonymity, said they're turning these departments of inclusion and diversity into internal intelligence services to root out anyone who opposes their political agenda.
Wow. And having read all of the original propagators of these theories, Chris, what is the end state? It doesn't seem as if the end state is harmony between intersectional classes in America. Is there a positive final objective, a final destination?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I think this problem goes back to Karl Marx. And Marx kind of described in very good detail why the capitalist society was bad in his point of view, and it made the argument to smash it. But you'll never see in Marx an idea of what does the great communist society look like in practice. He kept it very vague. His idea was that just by smashing the society, something better will naturally emerge. And the critical race theorists and others have the same view today. They say we need to destroy the United States. We need to abandon the Constitution. We need to dismantle all of the institutions in our society and traditions and religious practices. And then trust us. After we do this, something incredible, something beautiful, something perfectly utopian will emerge. We're not going to give you any details. We're not going to give you any practical plans. All we're focused on is destruction. And the thing that happens ever after that, just trust us, will be great.
Yeah, Marxists, Maoists, Leninists, they are excellent at destruction, excellent at dismantling. And then they want everybody else just to trust them as to what happens next. Not while we are here. We're talking to Chris Rufo. He's a filmmaker, director. He is the head of the Discovery Institute Center on Wealth and Poverty. You must see his film, America Lost. You can watch it for free. Thank you, Chris, at americalostfilm.com/premiere. He is a former research fellow at the Heritage Foundation and Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. Back with Chris momentarily. We are broadcasting from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, 100% drug-free pain relief that actually works. I've been taking it for more than 2 years now, and my lower back pain issue is gone after 9 years, almost a decade of it plaguing me. Likewise, Leah from Ohio. Listen to Leah. One Sunday morning, I sat on my couch in so much pain, I was in tears. That's the day I ordered Relief Factor. Following directions, in 8 days, I found relief, only to get better and better. I am a believer, 100%. Don't you deserve to find out if you could be the next Leah? It's so very, very simple. All you have to do is go to ReliefFactor.com, see the incredible testimonials from people across the country who are getting their lives back every single day, and then order the 3-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That translates to less than a dollar a day. What can you get for less than a dollar a day? I tell you what, potential liberation from your pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, order the 3-week quick starter pack. It'll be at your house in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it does for me, Leah, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? You know it makes sense. 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com.
Today, 1 month and 1 day after the attack, after that storm hit the Capitol, we are again warning. If there is no accountability and no attempt by the Republican Party to stop these insane lies that have taken root in their party, witness the support this week by the House Republicans for bigot and conspiracy theorist Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from Georgia. If there's no effort at accountability, this is not going to be the end of MAGA terrorism. This will only be the beginning.
That is quote-unquote journalist Jake Tapper of CNN calling an elected congresswoman a bigot and a conspiracy theorist, and then just casually dropping the phrase MAGA terrorism. Chris Rufo has been mapping the rise of critical theory in America, its penetration not only of our schools but also our government. And I have to ask you, Chris, how dangerous is it after an election where 74 million individuals voted for the incumbent president? How dangerous are phrases such as MAGA terrorism?
Yeah, they're extremely dangerous. And it's part of a campaign to manipulate language, to exclude large sections of the population from the political process. And you saw in the last 4 years of the last administration, journalists worked overtime trying to label conservatives as white supremacists, which is a really ugly and divisive phrase that was overextended, not to include people who are actually white supremacists, who we universally condemn, but actually rank and file Republican conservative voters used to intimidate them. But now with the coming Democratic administration, they've upped the rhetorical ante. They're going away from white supremacists and then upping the stakes to domestic terrorists. And the idea is, because they have control of the federal government, is to use the government to in essence, use the kind of anti-terrorism laws to harm and to exclude and to marginalize conservatives and Republicans. And it's quite dangerous, and it's totally irresponsible. But this is the new meme. This is the new narrative. And the media and the kind of Democratic activists are united in trying to extend this idea that not only are my political enemies wrong on the issues and we should vote against them, but we should actually treat them as domestic terrorists. It's an absolute outrage, but it's happening right before our eyes.
Is there anything that you, as the expert on this incredibly dangerous phenomena, recommend can be done now with a left-controlled House, Senate, and White House? What should the American response be to this phenomena that's been growing and growing and growing for decades, Chris?
Yeah, there's good news, I guess, is that Republicans still control a majority of state legislatures and governorships. A number of states have replicated President Trump's executive order and are now trying to pass it through their state legislatures, including the state of New Hampshire. And then it's really going to take a kind of grassroots movement of parents and citizens and neighborhood groups to actually look at what's happening within their local institutions and starting to push back. Because a lot of these theories are deeply damaging, but they rely on intimidation in order to be successful. They rely on the silence and the complicity of people to basically say, I'm not going to step out. I'm not going to risk being my reputation being damaged or being called bad names. The time for that fear is over. It's going to take people having courage and stepping up at their school boards, in their classrooms, in their churches, in their companies, in their places of work, taking the risk of standing up, knowing that the majority of Americans are behind them, and that these kind of ideologies can be stopped with community action at every level of our society.
So speaking the truth, standing up, pushing back, beyond that, is there an organizational and institutional requirement? Should there be, I don't know, some kind of movement that pushes back on this based upon, I mean, this isn't a hard argument you would think to make, given that critical race theory, intersectionality, the victimhood culture goes diametrically in opposition to everything that Martin Luther King and others fought for and often gave their lives for. So is there any next step in terms of response to this? Because, you know, it's stunning all the things you've provided us, but it's also stunning that almost every instance it's an anonymous source and somebody who just simply doesn't want to put their name to what they're telling you.
Yeah, I think there is. And frankly, I'll offer a bit of self-criticism to our own kind of friends and colleagues, but Republican elected officials need to start engaging on these issues. I think most Republicans are scared to engage on cultural issues. They're scared to say the wrong thing. So there's this gap and void in leadership. But our governors, our state legislators, our congressmen, our senators need to start getting savvy on culture war issues. They need to wade into it, and they need to fight more aggressively. Because the people want, and I think President Trump proved this, one of his great strengths was that he was unafraid to engage on these issues. But I think it's going to take all of our elected officials to really push hard and to fight and to come up with a successful kind of linguistic and legal and legislative strategy to push back on these issues.
It's interesting you use the phrase culture war. I think most established politicians wouldn't even use that phrase, Chris.
They wouldn't, because it's very treacherous terrain. If you say one wrong thing, you're going to get looped on CNN and kind of insulted on Twitter by millions of angry left-wingers. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. It means that we should be very strategic, very deliberate with our language, but actually push twice as hard, because these are the important issues of the day. These are the issues that matter. Unfortunately, we have a kind of void of leadership that must be filled in the years to come.
Andrew Breitbart was so right. So right. Everybody can quote him, but nobody really stops to think what that quote, the most oft-quoted Breitbart quote, actually means. That politics is downstream from culture. If you lose the culture, you can forget about the political debate being civilized. It will be utterly, utterly one-sided. We're talking to Chris Rufo, the maker of the incredible movie America Lost. He is the head of the Discovery Institute Center on Wealth and Poverty. Follow him right now at Real Chris Rufo. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Back with Chris in a moment. We're coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor. Are you suffering from daily pain? Have you tried everything else only to find it no relief? Then please do what I did. Try Relief Factor, 100% drug-free pain relief. Just listen to Reggie from Florida. I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Wow. A blessing sent by God. Find out if it could work for you. It's so very, very simple. Go to relieffactor.com, order the 3-week quick starter pack. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening, just like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you, like it works for me, Reggie, and thousands of your fellow Americans. Do it today. Call 800-500-8384. That number again, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. What have you got to lose except the pain? You know it makes sense. You've waited long enough. Do it today. Relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com.
Hi, this is President Trump, and Sebastian is really a friend of mine. He's a great guy. He's been with me from the beginning. Listen to him. We all learn.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. So kind. Let's play that clip again.
I don't want to speak. I want to create art, you know, but I have a big problem with bullies, and I have a big problem with, you know, I don't have a problem with power. I have a huge problem with abuse of power.
I don't have a problem with what I do in my day job. Abuse of power is the problem. That's Gina Carano. She perhaps could be the turning point. Let's ask a man who's been delving into the issues of political correctness out of control. Chris Rufo, is this Disney Star Wars actress story, is this significant? Is this a positive sign in your eyes?
Well, I think the positive sign about this is that Gina Carano didn't back down. She doubled down and stood up for her convictions. And then the other thing that is really interesting is that the Daily Wire immediately announced within a matter of days that they were going to be producing a film with Gina Carano and offering her, in essence, a kind of off-ramp from mainstream culture towards this kind of alternative conservative cultural institutional landscape. And I think that's really important. Cancel culture, you need to avoid cancel culture. You need to have alliances with institutions and people and kind of financing and opportunities that are separate from people who actually don't like you, don't want you to succeed. And I hope that this augurs a kind of new movement where people say, okay, I'm going to support companies and entertainment and platforms and voices that are kind of share my values, share my principles, share my convictions. So I wish the very best to Gina Carano and to the Daily Wire, and glad to see that they are turning this kind of cancellation into a new opportunity.
It's just as Charlie Kirk said here on this show a few weeks ago, we must, if we wish to push back effectively, there has to be a conservative infrastructure, a cultural ecosystem that responds, that rejects the cancel culture of the left. But before that is built, hopefully that's being built right now, God willing, it's happening as we speak. But before that happens, every single one of us, the 3 million people listening to this show, the millions of you who are going to watch it, hear it on podcasts and what have you, you just got to stand up to the bullies. Because if you don't stand up to the bullies, they win. It is that simple. Watch this man's amazing movie. It explains a lot about what's happened to America. It's called America Lost. He's allowing our listeners and viewers to watch it for free. AmericaLostFilm.com/premiere. He's Chris Rufo of the Discovery Institute Center on Wealth and Poverty. Follow him at Real Chris Rufo, R-U-F-O. God bless. Keep doing what you do. Thank you, Chris. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And especially now, stay frosty.